June 24th, 2015. CCWG with legal counsel in the GAC room. 8:30 a.m. to 11 or 12:30 p.m.
Welcome back. Please take your seats. Hi, Steve.
Thomas, how are you?
I'm fine.
And there's more. There's probably another spike. Yeah, the questions will go back on the screen.
Yeah.
We somehow need to try and spend some time for the bench break on the remaining question.
On the IR, yeah, it's quite important. A lot of
yeah. So
I've mentioned it.
Okay, thank you for coming back. We have the pleasure to have the co-chairs of the CCWG with us, including if I'm right, also the legal experts that work with them are in the room. I may maybe start with giving an update to our co-chairs about where the GAC is. First of all, with regard to the CWG, the GAC has reached an agreement on an answer to the CWG, which will be communicated, if it hasn't already, will be communicated soon at lunch today. That will basically say that the GAC agrees to send the CWG proposal to the ICG with the reference to the relation and the conditions conditionality to the work of the CCWG. And in addition to that, the GAC has had already an intense discussion on many but not all aspects of the relevant issues or questions regarding the current work of the CCWG. The one point that we haven't so far had the time to address in a little bit more detail is the question of the IRP mechanisms. We will somehow need to find the time to exchange in the GAC on this. We have quite had some exchange on possible role of the GAC and the role of the GAC in a new community empowerment structure with regard to the community powers and to what extent the GAC should participate in this, under what modalities, and so on and so forth. So that discussion has been very lively, but of course it's not terminated. So this is just to update you where we are. Maybe it would be helpful, knowing that you've had quite a lot of intense sessions on the CCWG side starting from Friday, that you could give us an update on the developments that are going on in the CCWG since basically the paper that you send out for public comments, so that we are updated and at the latest level of the discussion in the CCWG. So thank you.
Buenos días. Hablaré en español.
Leon Sanchez speaking. Good morning. We have a presentation. All right, let me begin by thanking GAC members for receiving us, for meeting with us. We have had very fruitful contributions from the members that have represented this committee within the CCWG. That is why we are so thankful to you, and we hope that your participation continues to be as constructive. As you well know, the IANA stewardship transition is a process that was convened initially by the NTIA. So could we have the next slide, please? We are part of a process which starts with the NTIA announcement last year about its intention to take a next step in order to transfer the stewardship functions. For IANA, ICANN should be a convener in this process, so the ICG was established, as well as the CWG that would take care of the domain names proposal for the IANA transition stewardship, and also the CRISP and that team was set up to look at the numbers proposal and the IANA plan from the protocol community. All these proposals had been already sent to the ICG, and we expect the names proposal to be sent soon to the ICG so that the ICG can combine the three proposals. The NTI established a certain criteria and requirements to increase and enhance accountability within ICANN. That is why the CCWG was set up. Thomas Rieker, Matthew Will, and myself are the co-chairs. So I would like to show you how we organized our work within the CCWG accountability group. We have been tasked with the drafting of a proposal to enhance the accountability and transparency mechanisms. So our group received this mission, and basically we have to put forward a proposal for the enhancement of transparency and accountability within ICANN. So we split our work into two lines. Workstream one, that has to do with those measures and mechanisms that have to be in place or committed at least by the time the transition takes place. And on the other hand, Workstream 2, focusing on more longer-term commitments. And obviously, here we can have more time to implement these mechanisms, and they are not directly related to the moment when the transition takes place. So now we are working on this proposal for the measures and mechanisms that have to be in place or at least firmly committed before the transition takes place. Later on, we will continue our activities within the group to look at the requirements for the second work stream. Next slide, please. The way we work is the following. We have 146 people, approximately. We have 26 who are members with this geographic distribution that you can see here on the screen. We have members from all the regions. And we also have representation within the stakeholders groups and the constituencies. And so we do not only have geographic representation. And we have had 94 calls and meetings as of today, including two face-to-face meetings in Frankfurt and in Istanbul, in addition to the meeting in Singapore and the sessions that we are having here in Buenos Aires. We are planning to have another face-to-face meeting next month in Paris. We have had more than 5,500 volunteer hours in putting together this proposal. And of course, we have had significant traffic through our mailing lists. You can see that all these volunteers have worked hard in order to put together a proposal to address the requirements for the first work stream. Now I would like to give the floor to my co-chair, Thomas Rieckert, for him to explain to you the main aspects of the new proposal. Thank you. Thomas?
Thank you very much, Leon, and I'd like to echo Leon in thanking the GAC for having us and giving us the opportunity to explain the current status of our work. Next slide, please. You will remember, and I'm going to keep this very brief, that we came to the conclusion that we can build all the required accountability mechanisms out of these four building blocks, which resemble a state. with division of powers, checks and balances. So we are using the analogy of a state where you have the people or the legislative, which would be the empowered community. You would have an executive, which would be the ICANN board. You would have a constitution, which would be the principles, core mission and values in the ICANN bylaws. And we would have a judiciary, which would be the independent review mechanism. And the way that those four would interact can be seen on the next slide. So the empowered community, and we will discuss this in a moment. Next slide, please. According to our current thinking, would constitute of the current SOs and ACs in ICANN structure. And these SOs and ACs would have voting rights. In our draft proposal, we had foreseen that all groups, all SOs and ACs, except for the EXEC and RSEC, would have 5 votes. And due to the special role and nature of EXEC and RSEC, we thought that 2 votes would be adequate for them to have. And this empowered community, as we call it, would be able to exercise certain rights. Next slide, please. Or maybe you can do 2 or 3 slides. It would have the power to review and veto ICANN's budget, the strategic plan, the operating plan, and also have a say on ICANN's bylaws, whereby it is important to remember, and you do know this already, that we are establishing 2 sets of bylaws. Normal bylaws, where the community, after a consultation process with the board, can veto a decision made by the ICANN board after the fact, after a decision has been made on a bylaw change, to ensure that for these normal bylaw changes, the community has a control function to ensure that actually the bylaw changes are in line with the deliberations and the communication, the engagement that has happened before the ICANN board took a decision. That is not to be confused with changes to be made to fundamental bylaws. Fundamental bylaws are those bylaws that have been deemed by our group to be so essential to ICANN's operations, but also to it as an organization, that these need to be more robust, yet not cast in concrete. That would be, for example, the mission, core values, and the commitments of ICANN. We do acknowledge that ICANN should not mission creep into other areas. At the same time, ICANN is working in a rapidly changing environment, and therefore we need to retain some flexibility for ICANN to change even the fundamental parts of the bylaws. But this should only happen if the community comes together and meets a very high voting threshold to make such changes. Also, the empowered community will have the opportunity to remove individual directors as well as recall the entire board in cases where the board chooses to ignore the community's wishes or violate the principles set out in ICANN's bylaws. But that should, and this should be very clear, a matter of last resort. Next slide, please. Mm-hmm. Next slide, please. So we've identified normal bylaws versus fundamental bylaws, and we can move on to the next slide, please. Finally, we are working on enhancing and improving independent appeals mechanisms, so that would be reconsideration and the IRP. And it is important to note that ICANN already has an independent review process, but that is deemed insufficient by some. So we are thinking of making that mechanism better to serve the community, i.e. aggrieved parties would expect not only decisions on procedural aspects, but also on the merits of the case. There have been cases where the IRP decided the decision was wrong, but due process was followed, and we think that this is unacceptable in a future ICANN. Also, the IRP shall be more accessible, it shall have reasonable cost to it, and we're considering to have a 7-member standing panel out of which 1 or 3 panelists would be picked to make decisions on an individual case. Now, we've put this out for public comment, and the good news is that we got very broad support for the community powers and for this basic setup of a division of powers. We got broad support for our revisions to reconsideration and to the independent review process. Yet, there are details to be refined and to be further worked on, but the good news is that this can remain as it is. There are basically three open areas that we need to discuss, one of which is diversity. So there has been a request by many that we should make diversity an integral part of our work, not only as an aspiration, but only in terms of operationalization of diversity. Second is openness and flexibility of the system. So we need to design the system in a fashion that allows us to change and adopt if ICANN or its community changes. For example, ESSEC and RSEC have signaled to us that they do not wish to engage in a voting scheme, but rather maintain their advisory role. But this system will allow for us to adopt and change their status if there should be such need in future. And finally, we have been asked to look more into our reference model, i.e. the model that serves as a legal vehicle to empower the community to exercise certain powers. And a lot has happened since last Friday and today, since we have analyzed the public comments. And with that, I'd like to hand over to my co-chair, Mathieu. He will show you through the analysis of the public comments and the consequences resulting thereof for our further deliberations.
Thank you, Thomas. I will speak in French. The next slide.
As it was described, my friend and co-chair Thomas, and apologize for my French, I'm making a mixture of languages here. One important point for us, and I think that for the whole of the community, is that this week we have been working on the coordination of the CWG IANA Transition Group. And here we have the six conditions that have been prepared by the names group. These are part of the criteria to approve this proposal before being submitted to the ICG. The six conditional criteria, first one we have in our initial report, all of them, and then based on the contributions that we have received from the community after the public comment period, the whole set of this point might be reached because no objection has been raised regarding the prerequisites of the names groups. So there has been certain conditions, but we are fully confident on the capacity of achieving and meeting all this within a timeline that will help the ICG and the IANA suicide transition process as a whole. What have been the other inputs that we have received from the community? I will not mention again the four fundamental pillars that are the basic powers and supplementary powers, because they have been supported by most of the comments received. The principle of the fundamental laws was also supported, as well as to better define the core values, the mission, and objectives of ICANN. However, within these elements, there are certain topics that should be further discussed. We would touch upon some of them, but it is good to define that we have protection regarding what might affect ICANN's remit. The integration of regulars, review of the ICANN's review process so that ICANN may be accountable and transparent, as well as some other aspects regarding the relationship between the ICANN and the U.S. government. There are some other issues that we have to detail a bit further that have to be refined. The independent review process meets the most important values or principles, and then there are some issues that should be further discussed, because we may receive contributions and inputs from the community. Thomas explained basically how we have adjusted our opinion about the membership model and how to secure and ensure that the powers may be exercised. Governments should make their contribution to diversity within the ICANN. It's not an objective per se, but we have to think about diversity within ICANN. The accountability of the ICANN boards and to the community itself appear after the public comment period. We have to discuss the standards of behavior and management of all ICANN's mechanisms. We will have to keep on working on that during this week. We will discuss all these issues, and some of the governments have pointed out some aspects of this issue that should be highlighted. These are issues that are well known in public organization, in government organizations for a while. And if we move to the next slide, that is the last one. We would like to say that from 60 contributions, 8 have been received from the governments. They are listed here in alphabetical order. And I really want to warmly thank them all, because they have certainly got engaged into a cross-community work. This is a substantial contribution. This means that we receive lots of substance in their comments, and the participants and members and representatives of the governments are essential for our group. We are thinking about governance and transition. These issues are of interest for GAC, but also for the capital cities that are closely following this process. So now I think that we should focus ourselves on the next stages, and we will answer all your questions. Habla Thomas Schneider. Muchas gracias a los Thank you very much to the co-chairs. Thank you for your presentation. We have a lot to be discussed in a short time. So let's open the floor for questions and comments. I ask the GAC members that they may use part of this session regarding the IRP, because this topic has not been discussed among us, and we should pose a question so as to ask this question to the GAC members to be ready for the Paris meeting. I don't know whether there are some other issues, some other questions that may arise after this presentation, and we should then identify a bit better what has been discussed last week. I can see that Brazil is asking for the floor.
Co-chairs of the group, and to acknowledge the tremendous amount of work and quality work that has been invested, in which we are taking part, and we want to actively contribute to its success. My comments will not refer exactly to the presentation that was made. We understand there are a few possibilities that are still being explored, some alternatives in regard to the mechanism modalities of participation, and as we have been discussing GAC on how we can provide input, and maybe other colleagues will comment on that. But the point I'd like to make, and this does not refer to the exactly to the work you have been doing, is that we consider that the accountability exercise that has been proposed and developing is taking place in a very restricted format in which there is no real liberty to explore options available. Actually, we think that some very interesting ideas were dismissed because they do not conform to the present legal structure, the present, the existing rules and procedures. And even when we look at the comments provided by the legal expert, it becomes clear that the context in which we are operating is predetermined. And in our assessment, it is okay to do it at this stage. We are working under pressure of time. But we would really like to see in your final report that you could also maybe indicate that there are some issues that have not been adequately addressed related to jurisdiction, governance, and issues that have raised and should merit to be further explored. We would like to see this transition phase not to be exhausted, to be considered exhaustive, but to lead to another phase. And as I have indicated before, and I apologize for colleagues who have listened to me before, to do it in a way that is not threatening to the agreed criteria and parameters we are all working under, and we fully agree. But so we are talking about preserving the security, the stability, the bottom-up approach. We are not looking into a model of governance that would be intergovernmental-led, so it's nothing. But rather we are thinking about a model that would reflect voluntarily agreed rules that would govern ICANN as such, and not be working in a predetermined and fixed status to which we have to adjust ourselves. And this vision, as I have indicated before, was conveyed by Net Mundial, which called in its roadmap document to ICANN that this process would lead to ICANN becoming a truly international, global, independent organization, truly responsive to the needs of all stakeholders. So by reaffirming our commitment to the process and to congratulating you for the work and reaffirming our confidence in the successful end of this first phase, we would really like to make sure that the process will not stop here, that we'll continue to explore things without the straitjacket we have been working in. I have just used a figure of language, which of course is not appropriate, but we, in a way, we have an open door to go out, and we are, in a way, limiting ourselves to stay inside, not looking to alternatives. We are maybe putting a picture on the wall and putting some lipstick and trying to, but we are not touching on fundamentals of, I think we should be doing it as a community. And we, my government, as part of the community, we see ourselves as part, we would like to contribute and to come to this model that would reflect that. Thank you.
Thank you. Brazil, I have Canada and France.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the co-chairs of the CCWG for being with us today. We've had several discussions within the GAC this week where stress test 18 and core value 11 have come up. And I just wondered if perhaps the co-chairs could explain the intent or the thought process behind these in order to further inform our discussions within the GAC. Thank you.
Maybe we give you an opportunity to react to these two statements and then continue. After that, I have France, Spain, and Iran.
Thank you, Chair. And I would like to respond to Brazil, and I'd like to initiate by my remarks by thanking Brazil for outstanding contributions during our work. So that has been very, very helpful. I guess we are about to make very fundamental changes to ICANN. There are many who think that we might even go beyond what they think helpful. So I think we are really starting at the very beginning. The methodology that we have applied was such that we first established the status quo of ICANN's accountability mechanism. We then reviewed public comment that has been received last year after the announcement has been made by the US government. And then we have added results of our own deliberations to come up with a list of requirements that our group felt necessary to substantially enhance ICANN's accountability. And that led us to certain models for implementation. And I think that our group has not, without thought, abandoned certain models. But since we are working on a consensus-based work approach, we have discussed with the groups the various options there are. We've done that again last Friday, where individuals in our group were invited to present their ideal vision of how ICANN should work in legal terms, etc. We listened to all that, we weighed the option, and then it became clear that there was a solution that would satisfy most criteria and that would get most traction in the group. So this is an iterative process. And yet I do certainly concur with you that we need to provide more rationale on decisions that have been made by the group, not to further pursue certain options that have been on the table. With respect to your comment on inclusiveness or having an inward discussion without looking at all the options that we could have, certainly we can and we need to work harder on being fully inclusive at the global level. We need to make sure that we get more comments from the global community to take that into the equation as we move forward towards a consensus. We have tried a couple of measures to reach out. We have, and I think this is more or less unprecedented in ICANN's history, we have not only issued a report and held webinars, but we've also prepared graphics, some of which you've seen today, to help illustrate and understand for those that are not familiar with reading lengthy reports and legal language to better understand what we're doing and to help them to comment. But we've also published the report in all UN languages in order to really reach out. But we would certainly appreciate feedback from the GAC as to how we can do better in order to be more inclusive. Let me conclude by saying that the jurisdiction question is on our table. We have spent a lot of time discussing it, yet we're cognizant of the limited window of opportunity in terms of time and the need for us to focus on the essentially required changes in what we call Workstream 1. But the jurisdiction question is and will be further deliberated. And I should say that it is multi-layered. So it's not only a question of where a headquarter is located. It is a question of what the governing law for ICANN's contracts with its contracting parties is. It is a question of what law should govern disputes against ICANN, but also from ICANN when it sanctions its contracted parties. And we're looking at all that. And our group has preliminarily concluded that as we move on, we should conduct an analysis whether, if at all, there are aspects where the current jurisdiction shows shortcomings compared to other jurisdictions in order to accomplish the accountability requirements that we're seeing. Also, we are working on the alternative dispute resolution mechanisms, which we've briefly alluded to, in order to limit the probability of parties actually using courts. And so we want to mitigate the risk of a certain jurisdiction having to chime in, but make this a self-sustainable model, more or less, where we have all the required checks and balances so that nobody needs to escalate to a level where courts need to be involved. For the next question responding to Canada, I'd like to hand over to Mathieu.
I will speak in French.
Mathieu will speak in. Stress test number 18, is a stress test on which we have discussed at length. Let me remind you that we looked at the change of procedure rules by the GAC, and this would lead us to a decision-making process based on a majority. Some of the interested parties seem to be under the impression that this would significantly reinforce the influence of governments on ICAM. So there was some concern about the fact that that would comply with the criteria established by the NTIA for the transition process. This is the source of that stress test. Our group has been open to collecting all the information and also all the extreme cases and to avoid judging over probabilities. Recognizing the concerns of all parties, because we are here dealing with concerns. So all these concerns have been considered. There was much going back and forth with the GAC because we maintained exchanges with different emails or letters over these issues. And I think that we need to highlight how we have evolved. We consider evolution aspects in this stress test. So the first proposal was amended after some exchanges between the governments and the CCWG. So all these parties expressed their views. So the first proposal, this proposal, the current proposal, needs to be compatible with the current practice, and it should not limit the GAC in its potential future evolutions of its modalities of work. Therefore, the proposal that has been put forward shows that the ICAN board, when receiving GAC advice, should engage in certain procedures that would be of a mandatory nature. Once the GAC advice has been achieved through consensus, we do not establish that. That is done on a voluntary basis. The whole group of stakeholders in our group decided not to establish any specific requirements in that regard. So that is important. This is the state of progress on this issue. We know it is a sensitive issue, especially at the government level. But there are also some other stakeholders that have raised their expectations and concerns about the stress test. And I believe that exchanges should continue to make sure that everybody understood well what point we are at this moment. And from this point of view, the communication from GAC or from individual GAC members on this issue will be really useful to us. Thank you so much, Mathieu. Thomas Schneider speaking. Thank you, Mathieu.
Question. In regard to what has just been said, I'm asking this because I'm not too familiar with. Is there any other stakeholder that is also being judged by that kind of standard? Because just very briefly, in the case of Net Mundial, which we organized together with the community, we found it would be good for each stakeholder community to organize themselves and to be able to provide the best advice they could. And one, it was not interfering in the other, because I think part of the multi-stakeholder exercise is to respect the culture of each stakeholder to organize themselves and provide input. I think in the case of governments, there are mechanisms governments use to assess the advice or their inputs for processes, and not in each and every case by consensus. So it seems rather strange that we are being judged. I'd like to see, to know if other stakeholders are subject to the same kind of stress test. Thank you.
Alors, toujours en français.
Matthew Will speaking. Effectively, for the GNSO and for making decisions on policy issues regarding generic domain names, there are rules in the bylaws that determine the minimum level of consensus that needs to be reached. So there is some precedent in ICANN on this issue. This is the answer that I can give you right now. Thomas Schneider speaking. Thank you. Next, I have Spain and then Iran. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming to brief us and exchange views with us. I would like to tackle the point of appeal mechanisms in this instance. First of all, let me assert that I think that the existence of appeal mechanisms is necessary in an organization that aims to be accountable. In every state, we have three powers, and one of them is the judicial power, which aims to control what the executive power does. So it's very important to have these appeal mechanisms in place, no matter that policies are made bottom-up and should be community-driven, but in any case, if there are aggrieved parties, they should have the opportunity to challenge decisions made. And these appeal mechanisms are even more important for minorities, for groups that are represented within ICANN, but whose voice may not be heard as loud as the voice of others in ICANN. And nevertheless, they may have legitimate interests which should be considered, and so they should have the opportunity to defy decisions. But it is even more important for groups and stakeholders that are not represented within ICANN and that may be affected by decisions taken by ICANN. In this respect, we commend the working group for having been sensitive to these needs and lowered the barriers of entry to these appeal mechanisms. We notice that there are provisions to make them more affordable, although we'd like them to be extended if it is possible. We've also noticed that the standard of review has been expanded to include substance, not only process, and this is key. But we notice as well that for a person to use these appeal mechanisms, it needs to be materially affected or have suffered damage already to go in front of the RIP panel. And we do think that there may be instances in which the harm has not been done yet, and thus that should not prevent that party from using these mechanisms. I would like to say also that we still have some doubts on whether all efforts have been made to guarantee full independence of the panel. The panels are going to be paid by ICANN. I wonder whether it could be possible to pay the organization from which they are recruited instead of paying the salaries of the panels. I think that that could be could improve the independence of the panelists. And on the diversity point, it's true that it's not a requirement, but it's an aspiration. And I feel very close to this issue. And we've stated in our comments that maybe the use of English as a working language in the procedures may limit the number of panelists that can be recruited to be in the RP panel. I don't know, maybe you contradict me and say that it's not going to be a barrier for someone who is a lawyer, who is a specialist in a matter, and who comes from a country with a different legal tradition, but who doesn't speak a perfect legal English. So I would like the working group to consider this, maybe building on the experiences of other organizations that also have arbitration panels. And a final comment on the response given to Brazil, I think. That you, if I have understood correctly, you are trying to avoid as much as possible going to courts. Well, from maybe from a minority group in a distant country, they will be safer if they go to their own courts, because they have to have the procedures in their own language, in a legal environment, they more or less feel comfortable. So I don't think that the goal should be to avoid courts. The possibility of going to courts should always be there. But what we want is to have an internal appeal mechanism with sufficient guarantees of independence, affordable, and effective as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Spain. I think we should note the issues that have been raised by Spain, and I would also incite you then maybe in the last part of this discussion to particularly focus on the IRP. We'll also have to look at a question that we can then send out to GAC members to give their views on this. So I don't know whether you want to keep this. Maybe there will be more questions coming in on the IRP. I have so far on the list, I have Iran, France, Switzerland, and Morocco. I'd like to go and Indonesia, and then I'd like to, after these interventions, like to move on and focus on the IRP, because that is something that we as a GAC haven't discussed. So please be short. The next one is Iran.
Thank you, Chairman. Unfortunately, it's difficult to be short because there are major questions. If you want to be short, it's better not to talk. So I don't think we rush. We are discussing basic principles, so we have to be clear. So there's no short and not short, 30 seconds, 20 seconds. So let's just continue instead of discussing. Distinguished Chair, thank you very much for coming and explaining to us. We understand that in order to empower the community to exercise some or all of their empowerment area, there is a need to have some sort of membership. Is there any minimum for that membership? I give an example. We have 7 SO and AC. Is it possible that having only one single SO or AC be member and the other SO and AC could benefit from that one single membership and exercise their power? Question one. Question two. If there is no membership at all, what is the situation? Suppose that all of them decide not to be a member. They don't need to reply now, they reply later. So what's the situation? Third. Suppose that like SAC and RSAC, some others decide not to exercise their vote. You said that you will consider that. Is it necessary to consider it now, or you put into the bylaw their right to vote and it's up to them to exercise it or not? Why we want to have a different alternative proposal? You put all SO and all AC could have the right to vote on certain things, and it's up to them to use that right or not to use that right. That is another question that needs to be replied. Then, if somebody don't want to vote at all, is there any alternative way? Some people are talking of expressing an opinion. Does opinion has any legal status? Instead of voting, you just express opinion. How it works legally? And another question, you said that you want to replace the court to the extent possible with a dispute resolution. There are two different areas. You could not do that. Suppose that I can board decide on something, disputed by community, go to IPR, IPR confirm that, binding, I can disagree with that, go to the court. You said that instead of going to the court, go to the dispute resolution. So what is the status of the dispute resolutions? The result is binding or not binding? Consequently, there are many, many questions yet to be answered. In our view, it is our view, that we should not complicate the situations and having so many complex procedures which will be difficult to be applied. In particular, for some countries, they do not have necessary machinery or necessary support legally, financially, and so on and so forth, if their cases are on the stake. So we should take most simplest approach, if possible, and not go to that level. Thank you.
Thank you, Iran. Let's give the floor to our co-chairs to try and give a simple answer to all these questions. Thank you. And please be short.
Okay, first of all, with respect to the points raised by Spain, these are well noted, excellent ideas. We will take those into account when we further deliberate. With respect to the questions from Iran, let me also stress that the representative of Iran has been extremely helpful in our deliberations and his commitment. I hope I've noted all questions correctly, but what would happen if only one organization chooses to obtain formal membership status? We will, according to our thinking, this is work in progress, and I can't emphasize this enough. We have more meetings during this week and later on to further refine the niceties of this refined model. But even if only one organization chooses to take the formal steps to enter into a relationship with ICANN, we will still make sure that the bylaw language gives the same weight of votes to those that do not wish to take this formal step. To avoid a situation, to give an example, let's say the GNSO, that's the organization that I'm coming from, chooses to take this formal step, then there must be no situation where only the GNSO has the right to cast votes. So those organizations that choose to vote will have the same weight and impact of their votes. Yet, we want to make this approach as lightweight and as less invasive as possible. So for the time being, all organizations can choose not to do anything, not to take any formal steps with respect to their status and their relationship with ICANN. They will vote, should they choose to vote, and that will be taken into consideration when it comes to defining the voting threshold and whether there is traction for certain motions that have been put on the table. And should the board honor the decisions made by this group of SOs and ACs, then there is no further step required. It would all be entirely voluntary based, and we would not need to take any further steps. Only in case an organization wishes to take a more formal step, then that could be then we would have this enforceable rights. But we think that chances are high that the board will honor decisions that are being made by this group. So it will be a drafting exercise whether or not the status of all organizations has to be enshrined in the bylaws, or whether we mirror the current status of responses that we got in the bylaws and yet keep the model open for future changes, as I've mentioned earlier. So it is well possible that since the GAC and RSEC, since the ESSEC and RSEC, due to their special nature and limited nature, want to abstain from the voting rights, do not want to exercise voting rights, and that will be reflected in the bylaws. Yet the system could be open to future changes. Arbitration should be binding. That's a principle, and certainly we need to ensure that there can't be a back and forth, as you explained, between board decisions and the IRP. So we need to further consider the niceties, but the basic principle is that IRP decisions need to be binding and that therefore the chance to go to court are diminished. But let me be perfectly clear, with the community powers that we have put in our proposal, the escalation paths towards a decision by this community group shall be a last resort. There will be prescribed consultation and engagement mechanisms before the board takes a decision. And by doing so, we do hope that we can maintain a culture where board decisions are consensus-driven, and that we would only use voting mechanisms if that is required because the board wishes to ignore the community's wishes.
To change a bit, I will speak in English. One point I would like to add to what Thomas said, which I think can never be emphasized enough, is although the principles of the system will be set in the bylaws very soon, hopefully in a few months' time, we will ensure this remains flexible, and I will give examples. Example number one is the Root Server Advisory Committee. We've met with them yesterday, and they're clearly saying, right now we are an advisory committee, we are appointed by the ICANN board, we have a narrow focus and mission, and so we don't want to participate in this voting mechanism. That is the current status. But they're also saying at the same time, in the future, we may want to organize ourselves as a community, and maybe in 5, 10, 15 years' time, they will become a supporting organization of ICANN. That would be conceivable, considering their important role in the security and stability of the DNS. Because of that, what we have confidence in is that if it ever comes into play, it's going to go through changes of bylaws of ICANN and so on, but our system will adjust to that, and they will be able to participate to this voting mechanism. So there is flexibility to also maybe accommodate someday an Internet of Things supporting organization, if it ever comes to be a reality. So there is flexibility still. It's not closed on when we finish our report, exactly who has which voting rights and everything. There is going to be some flexibility embedded into the system for that. And safeguards as well, which are the ones we are providing for the bylaw changes or the fundamental bylaw changes for the key provisions in the bylaws. So I think it's important to stress that it's not going to be the final call. It's not going to freeze ICANN structure forever. And so we have an important responsibility, but we still have abilities to adjust after that.
Thank you. I have five more requests for the floor for the time being. We have about 20 minutes left. My plan would actually have been to spend at least the last 50 minutes on concentrating on the IRP, because otherwise we may not have the time to discuss this at all in the GAC, because we will start drafting the communique in the afternoon. So my question to you is, how should we proceed? Should we try and get those of you that want to speak not on the IRP first and take them all together, maybe give one response opportunity to the board, and then gather everything that is linked to the IRP maybe take a little bit more time than 12:30? Is that something that... because we somehow need to structure the discussion in order to get everything out of it that we should. So I have France, Switzerland, Morocco, Indonesia, and Egypt. So I suggest that we end the list here for the non-IRP-related discussion, and you make your points very quick. We give the board one response, and then we focus only on the IRP after that, if this is okay for you. I don't see any objection, so let's try and see whether this works. France, please.
Merci, Monsieur le Président.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Of course, the Voice of France joins you in your congratulations. We agree with Brazil regarding the legal framework. We have to stress that in the presentation to the CCWG. We hope, as many others, that the issue of resorting to the courts will be discussed later, so as not to lose everything that has been said so far. I'd like to mention 4 points. The first one, the community empowerment. We know that CCWG went back to the initial proposal, and so in this respect, if any state is demanding to have a legal standing in foreign law, this will be something completely new. Now, let's go to the new proposal of the CCWG. I hope this will not put the governments on an equal foot, in an equal status. We would have to analyze from the legal perspective all these implications. The second point is related to the risk of capturing the institutional framework of ICANN. We think that the CCWG initial model was threatened to be captured, to be hijacked by a group of individuals, so that the stakeholders may consider everything included in the Net Mundial Declaration. We know that this is discussed seriously within the ICANN. This also is related to the adoption of a major policy regarding the new ICANN and the ICANN board and the IRP and all these topics. I would like to mention briefly the appeal mechanisms. The two most important principles that guided your reflection, because we know that the IRP decisions are mandatory. And this is related not only to ICANN's policies, but to the agreeing over the ICANN's board decision with the bylaws. We don't have problems with the way the CCWG is tackling the implementation of all this. We have been working hard with our colleagues who had considered the implications of resorting to international arbitration, and we know that this is a legitimate concern. So that for the next meeting of CCWG, you will discuss this in Paris. I want to add a comment in this respect. We would like to highlight that the objective of the ICANN's enhanced accountability process is not to put the ICANN in the position of resorted to international courts. I think the two things have been mixed up over there. And the last point regarding the stress test, AT, and core value 11, we have mentioned it in our public comment. We think that the amendments to the bylaws show a tendency to voluntarily challenge the responsibility of governments regarding public policy. We have taken note of the fact that this is not a view shared by all members of GAC. Some GAC members do not agree with the proposals, with the proposal of amendment. We insist that we want to leave all this in a statu quo, but what would happen if the GAC cannot accept the CCWG proposal in Dublin? What would we do? Thomas Snyder speaking. Thank you very much, Franz. We are going to join all this with other questions. Switzerland next.
Much for the presentation to the co-chairs of the CCWG. As a participant to that group and obviously as a GAC member, I would like to stress the fact or to remind ourselves, as Thomas Rickert said, that we are here before fundamental changes in the structures. Second point is that the dust is just settling now and that we are just now having a clearer picture of what those new structures or what that new framework might be. And third point is that we have been listening to some of the leaders of this community setting 2016 as a deadline for this process. So we have to be mindful of that time frame too. And fourth, I think we are witnessing today very interesting and substantive discussions within the GAC. And as has been explained to you, I guess there will be inputs to the CCWG for the Paris meeting. So I would just like to stress the fact that probably it's possible that you receive hopefully creative inputs from GAC members on the possible ways the GAC may fit into the new structures. So perhaps it's a way of requesting to keep the mind open, because perhaps it's not just a yes or no answer to what you are proposing and what we are seeing now, now that the dust has settled, but perhaps you will receive more creative inputs. And I think it will be useful that everybody keeps an open mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Switzerland. Morocco.
Je vous remercie, Monsieur le Président.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I would like to join my colleagues in expressing my appreciation for the considerable efforts made by the CCWG on accountability. In our opinion, these efforts should be sustained and enhanced. I have a comment, a thought, and a question. Let me begin with my question. Our delegation views this process as a virtuous dynamics in order to reach a more inclusive, more transparent, and more accountable model that will reinforce the credibility and legitimacy of ICANN. We are really ambitious, and we have to be realistic. We need to take into account everyone's concerns, and we consider this process as one stage within a long process, as the ICANN chairman said it this morning. This is a process that needs to be reinforced and enriched in the future. So now let me share with you a thought, and I believe that the slide on the screen makes me reflect on the number of countries that have made contributions or reacted to the work of the working group. There are 8 countries out of the 152 GAC members and observers. So this is less than 5% or 5% of the countries. So this should make us reflect within the GAC on how we can talk about an inclusive model if we do not endeavor to include the communities and also represent the interests of the developing countries, the African countries, trying to do a better job at raising awareness and bringing them closer. Then, regarding the relations and dependencies between the work of the CWG and the CCWG, I would like to know what are the dependencies in that regard. Indonesia holds the floor now.
Sorry, I don't recognize your Indonesian words in France. Yes, Chair. I think this we have heard about the discussion on how we have to put the jurisdiction of the organizations and how the another approach is to use a dispute resolutions within the organizations to look after if there is a dispute between members of the internet society group in the whole world. Now, separate from that, we cannot, every country can still enforce whatever the law they have in their countries. So dispute may also arise when some countries would like to enforce the law in their countries in the internet system. Now, to overcome this problem, I just would like to quote the agreement, the proposal of the UN Working Group on Internet Governance about the possibilities of having a convention among countries for the internet governance. This is also reiterated on a short speech of the Indonesian minister at the GCCS, last GCCS in Den Haag, where it was shown the importance of the possibilities of having a convention of this type. With this convention, then every country has to follow and cannot enforce whatever they want, even in their own countries. If we agree for the bylaws in the organization to bind all of us, then just put it in the convention and we will agree for that. With this case, there will be no complaints about whereabouts of the organizations and the jurisdiction of the organizations. Now, it will take a bit of time, of course, but we have the GAC here. Well, I'm not saying the convention of the GAC, but convention of the countries. But we are representing the countries, as many of us mentioned. So we can start to see that separate from all the process, or the CWG process, or the CCWG process, to avoid possible problems in the future, then in parallel with all this process, we can start to think as how to avoid all the problem in the future by having separate from all the proposals to have the conventions for all of us. And the GAC can start this. It doesn't have to be a UN convention. It is just the GAC conventions. As long as it is agreed by all countries, then here it is. We will follow the bylaws of the organization. We will follow the dispute resolution in the process instead of the law in the country. And I also understand that some countries have some sort of like extraterritorial jurisdiction in the countries where a crime carried out in other countries but cause a problem in their country can become a criminal under the law of that country, although it may or may not be a criminal in the law of the other countries. So this kind of things very, very complicated because there are so many countries. But once we have the conventions, we will forget all the differences in the law and we just follow the bylaws of the institutions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Indonesia. Last, I have Egypt.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation, for the tremendous work, and for being flexible to accept new models at such a late stage. Actually, I was triggered by the discussion by our colleague from Iran and yourselves regarding the flexibility of the model, and that SOs and ACs can express interest to exercise voting powers at a later stage. And I understand this would be reflected in the bylaws. So would this be subject to the normal bylaw change cycle in terms of not getting into effect until a public comment period and so on? So it's not something that's immediately going to take place. And more importantly, would this be subject to a public comment period and subject to, I mean, somehow further approval by the community if an SO or an AC requests such? Thank you.
Thank you. So you have received quite a lot of input, so try and give some answers.
Briefly, maybe starting with Egypt, yes, there would be certainly community input. Changing of the ICANN structure is a structural change, so in accordance with the principles of the of operating ICANN, it should certainly go through community input, and actually the process we're describing from bylaw changes would apply. So there would be a lot of coordination amongst the community with on such changes. If you want, we can move that further right after that. I would address two of the procedural issues that were raised, and I think there were many other comments that were extremely helpful for us to listen in, and I know many of the group members and participants are sitting in this room and listening intently to take that on board while we move further, and I can reassure you we will try and stay as open-minded as possible in this process, because I think it's a condition for success. So what happens if the GAC or another chartering organization does not approve the final report when it's issued in Dublin? So technically this is a possibility that is described in the charter of the cross-community working group. And so what the charter says quickly is that the CCWG may, at its discretion, reconsider, pass for public comments, and or submit to the chartering organizations a supplemental draft proposal which take into account the concerns raised. So we would have to consider whether we do a supplemental draft report or not. That would be decision one. And then if we move into that, whether we launch new public comments and so on. So obviously, with the timeline that we are currently considering, that would jeopardize the whole transition. That's just a fact, because of the conditionality for the INS stewardship transition on the one side, from the naming community, and because it's been made clear by NTIA that it would only consider a full package, including the accountability proposal. So that's a fact, and I don't know. So there's not much of a plan B in terms of timing. Next is the how we are going to coordinate with ICG and the other track of the INR stewardship transition proposals. We've been working very closely with the CWG the last few months. We are getting up to speed with closer coordination with ICG now, because hopefully they are the one in charge after this meeting. And we'll keep interacting. And a formal step will be in Dublin, where certainly due to the dependencies that have been set up with our group, the CWG stewardship will have to certify that our proposals meets their condition. And that certification will certainly be provided to all chartering organizations as part of the final proposal process. So that's the kind of coordination we're looking at this point. I won't be any longer Mr. Chair, because I think we need more time.
Thank you. So now I suggest we take 10, maybe maximum 50 more minutes to focus on comments, positions, and an exchange with you, but also among GAC members on issues on the review mechanisms. We've already heard some opinions or some elements on things that are important to at least some governments like Spain and France. So please comment on, share your views or your questions on the elements of the independent review mechanisms. The draft question that we have so far that we would then send out to you for comments until somewhere around 10 July for the time being is in what ways would the proposed improvements to the IRP be satisfactory for public policy and government's needs, for example, in terms of increasing transparency, increasing focus, etc. So that is the question that we are trying to use as one that would trigger your comments and your input into the CCWG. So please, let's try and focus on the IRP and have an exchange on this. Maybe those who already have made comments in the public comment period may start. African Union Commission.
Thank you, Chair, and I'd like to thank the co-chairs of the CCWG for that presentation. I have two questions, and perhaps they've already been addressed. And these questions have also, I think, have also been posed by the board generally regarding interim relief that is being proposed. And the question here is, would permitting interim relief before any actual action is taken by the board have serious adverse consequences on ICANN's ability to function? And in this case, I would like to use our example where in May 2014, the IRP issued a decision on interim measures of protection instructing ICANN to stop our TLD from proceeding until the final decision. So the question is, shouldn't, in what we're proposing, shouldn't the interim relief be only available when there is very definitive and concrete and substantive controversy to that specific issue? The other thing is the issue of openness and transparency and focusing. But you have a panel that doesn't really understand how the ICANN or GAC functions. And so we'll probably have the tendency to veer off the main issue, focusing perhaps on more process issues rather than the issue at hand. The other question is time frame. Should we not set a time frame for when a panel should issue its decisions? Right now we have a panel that where we have a process where we don't really know when we'll ever get a decision. And we asked that question this morning to the board, and the board didn't have an answer either. So it could be 2 months, 6 months, 6 years, 20 years. So thank you.
Thank you, African Union Commission. Reactions to this or further comments? Whoever wants to take the floor, please take the opportunity. Okay, Leon.
Thank you very much to the African Commission for their comments. We will definitely take them into account in our discussions this week, and we will continue to address the different concerns raised.
Thank you. Further comments or questions on the review processes? Spain?
I don't want to expand on what I said before, but it could have been helpful to have the legal advisors here to answer questions related to IRP. I don't know if they are in the room.
They are here.
They are here.
They are here.
So you can actually ask a question to them.
I see them in the room. I would just note that it's not necessarily the always the safest to ask lawyers questions on the fly. So I'm just putting this caution that if it hasn't been researched yet, they might not be in a position to answer. And obviously, we would take that for later. But they are here and listening, I know. So if you have specific questions, please do raise it.
As regards the effects of IRP decisions, it's mentioned in the proposal that the decision can be enforced before U.S. courts or before any other jurisdiction in which ICANN can litigate. In one of the stress tests, I don't remember the number exactly, it is foreseen that in the case that the board doesn't abide by an IRP decision, the community panel can spill the board because of that decision to reject to implement an IRP decision. So that for me, it raises the question of what is the precise nature of the resolution adopted by the IRP. Is it an internal mechanism the community can enforce on the ICANN board through indirect ways, such as spilling the board in if the case may be, or is it binding on both parties of the litigation so that if ICANN doesn't abide by that resolution, the party prevailing in the conflict needs to go to a court in order to have it enforced on ICANN? So what is the legal nature of the resolution adopted by the IRP? Thank you.
Thank you. Who would like to respond to this?
Well, I think this is more a question with respect to the architecture of the accountability mechanisms as such and how they interplay. So certainly the IRP decisions, according to our current thinking, should be binding upon the board. And then the question is, what happens if the board does not follow an IRP decision? And in that instance, there are two other community powers that can be exercised: either remove individual directors or threaten to move to recall the entire board. So we think that the risk of a need to go to a court and have an IRP decision enforced on ICANN is a merely theoretical reason, because the community will step in case the board chooses not to honor IRP decisions and threaten the board that they will be removed. And we do think, you know, ICANN these days is an organization that is under enormous global scrutiny, that it is very unlikely that board members will ignore, in the light of public supervision, if you wish, to not follow IRP decisions, and we can then remove them. And so we think that the likeliness, as remote as it might be, the likeliness of the board being removed is higher than the need for an IRP decision to be enforced in court.
Thank you. I have Iran.
Thank you, Chairman. First, I have some comments, and then I have some reflections of what our chairman or co-chairman of the CCWG replied. First, the questions. We have some concerns about the compositions of the Gesundheit, composition of the board of this panel. We have concerns about the numbers. We have concerns about how they have been proposed. Currently, it's mostly in hand of the ICANN board, and would like to have some clarification why it is so. Now, coming to the question raised by Spain and replied by our co-chairman, if a decision made and contested by community and resulted to go to the IRP and then decision is made, is not automatically result in removal of the board. Because ICANN board may say that this binding decision is inconsistent with our fiduciary duties. And who would reply to that? That is court or whatever other procedures. You could not say any decision is binding because ICANN has some fiduciary duties, and these fiduciary duties provide them that saying that no, this may be correct, but is against what we expected to do. And then going to the court, I still have doubt that the dispute resolution would replace the court. And then I have difficulty to say what we heard this morning from the ICANN board, that it should go to the different jurisdiction. No doubt it should go to the jurisdictions of California law. So it is automatically there, and that is concern raised. The people would have different type of jurisdiction. So everything will be in hand of the jurisdiction of California. Thank you.
If I can just offer a couple of thoughts on this. First of all, on the initial points that you raised around the selection process, they are part of the feedback we've got from the public comment and certainly being taken to heart as we refine the proposal on this. Then you highlighted an issue in the interplay between the various mechanisms, and we certainly have to ensure we properly craft this so that there's no deadlock. One thing that is going to be extremely useful to that is that the IRP, while having binding powers, does not have the power to revisit policy. It can say, I confirm this decision, or it can say, this decision is to be remade, it is void, and that's it. As a consequence, the possibilities to interfere with the board's fiduciary duty are very limited, very, very limited. And I hope that this will be our that will enable us to craft those mechanisms so that we don't get into the deadlock that you described, which is obviously something that needs to be avoided at all costs.
Thank you. I have one more request for the floor from the African Union Commission.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hold you. One of my concerns is not only with regard to the composition of the members of the panel, it's not only the geographical distribution of the members, but one of the problems is their competency too. In the case of Delta Africa, we have seen a panel asking some questions that are not really relevant to the process itself. And you find yourself people dragging the process and hijacking it in a manner that is not beneficial for the ICANN processes at all. So one of the issues we need to take into consideration is we need to have a panel who does understand not only the ICANN processes and mechanisms and policies, but also can contextualize everything with regard to the area which is actually being considered. This is very important. And my other concern will be with regard to the fact that from now on, their decision could be some kind of binding the board or taking some kind of decision. Auditing is auditing, if I may say. But hijacking the system, anybody today can stand up and say, I need an IRP process, and then hijack everything. And finally, we get into something that is not relevant to anybody. Please consider that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The African Union Commission again. Yes, we are taking that into consideration. That is why this standing panel will be chosen by the community. We will look into fleshing out the details on the requirements that those panelists must meet, of course, and we will also be looking into safeguards so this IRP cannot be used as an extortion mechanism for the against the community and the corporation itself. So thank you very much for your remarks.
Thank you. If there are no more requests for the floor, then I think we can stop. I have Iran, and then we try to stop the discussion, at least for now. Thank you.
Just for the attention of our distinguished co-chair, it is not that you consider. You need to establish clear criteria how this should be invoked, but not everybody take that. It should be clear criteria to be met, then goes to this process. Thank you.
Thank you, Iran. So I think we all need a lunch break. And with this, we thank the co-chairs and everybody else for participating in this discussion. We will resume as the GAC at 2 o'clock, where we will then have a quick discussion on how to move this forward, and then we will, I think, start with the drafting of the communique. So thank you all for this good debate.
Thanks for having us.
And enjoy your lunch. And by the way, we hope that in particular one person will be able to enjoy his lunch because it's his birthday. So happy birthday to you, Tom.